Hello and welcome to Parental Guidance Suggested. This is Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Cravens.
And we are going to suggest what movies you should or should not see. Again, just a suggestion.
I mean, at this point, I think you know how to play the game.
If it speaks to you,
like
whatever.
It's how you do, yeah.
We don't care. So what did you see?
I saw Mile 22.
And that is?
A Mark Wahlberg action film.
Which is what he does.
Well, I mean, not exclusively. Like, he's done some stuff with Scorsese that I would think would qualify more as drama. But, like, that's his bread and butter. Like,
I enjoy him.
That's how he's sending the kids to school. Like, that's how he gets Mama a new pair of shoes.
I enjoy Mr. Wahlberg.
When he was very much just a model or a recipient of funky bunching... I did not respect him as an actor. I remember, like, I think it was the movie Fear was the first time I had seen him. I remember seeing it. I didn't find it tremendously memorable. I don't think I really legitimately took him seriously as an actor or
Until
made
the
it
happening.
A point. No. I mean, a little bit before that.
Come on, The Happening.
The Departed was the movie that I think sold Mark Wahlberg to me. Kind of like how Leonardo DiCaprio, who I'm a tremendous fan of now, initially when he was just the pretty boy,
he annoyed you, didn't he?
Maybe I resented him because he was so pretty. But like I wasn't sold on him. Sometime around when he again also started working with Martin Scorsese. I want to say it's like The Aviator or Gangs of New York. I think Gangs of New York was first. And that was the one I was sitting there going, well, if Martin Scorsese thinks this guy can do something. Okay, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'll check it out.
I've noticed just on the surface that Leo is morphing just like Frank Sinatra did. At first, look at them really, really young, not young like 14-year-old Leonardo, but look at them in their 20s, him and Frank Sinatra, when Sinatra first started to act.
Right.
You've got this really, really slender, gangly guy. Admittedly, Sinatra kind of had a weird look going on. But what I'm trying to say is you had a gangly guy, the girls were all, woo, and then they've sort of bulked up a little. Yes, and Sinatra just almost unrecognizable from the severe ganglionarian that he was to what the chairman of the board became.
You want another like person that was almost unrecognizable? Like, and I mean, I knew it because like I've been a fan of film for years, and like I will follow like the entirety of somebody's
Russell
career.
Russell Crowe.
No. Though that's another, like, yeah. From, say, like, The Mummy from, like, Gladiator or something like that.
Yeah.
It was Marlon Brando.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say Brando.
Brando, like, she had watched Superman with me countless times, and he famously played Jor-El, his father. I think we had rented The Score or something like that, which was, if I'm remembering correctly, it may have been Brando's last movie.
When you're saying she, do you mean
my
an
sister.
Artificial intelligence?
No, sister. My sister had watched it.
Just
with
she.
She's at one point, she had also didn't realize Harrison Ford was in Star Wars. Like,
ooh.
We were watching this in anticipation of episode one, and she comes over to this little nerd fest we're having, sits down, and she goes, is that Harrison? I didn't know he was in these, and I'm just like, it's the most like.
Why did you have to tell me that about her? Why?
Listen, she was not bathed in like the nerd waters that
right.
I was. Okay, like
if that's the only misstep, I will accept it.
I'm just saying, like it's obvious to me that he was Harrison Ford was Han Solo, but. She didn't watch them as much as I. Like, when me and my cousins would sit down when, like, they'd air them on, like, CBS, when, like, that was the only way you could watch the Star Wars movies, because, like, I didn't have the VHS or anything of them. Like, she would, you know, go do anything else, like, go hang out with one of our younger cousins. But me, Rob, and Josh, my two cousins, because you don't know these people, we were glued to the screen, because they'd do it as, like, a three-night event or something like that. So, like, I knew very, very well that the guy that was in Raiders of the Lost Ark was also the guy that was in Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. I just went off on a tangent there. Anyways, Brando. She sees him in that. Like, The Score and Superman are kind of her point, her entry point for Marlon Brando. And Brando's not in great shape in either of those. And he's not really doing a lot either.
And this was before he could have been a contender.
That's when now, on the waterfront, the particular movie that I was watching whenever she realized it and I drew the line for was Streetcar Named Desire. Mm-hmm. Now, Brando, he is in fantastic shape in that movie. Like, several decades before Superman or The Score or Island of Dr. Moreau.
Or when he bought that island.
Or any of those jokes of, like, a role to give to the man that did The Godfather or On the Water or any of these. And she's like, oh, who's that? And I'm like, that's Brando. And she's like, what? The guy from the... No, it's not. And I'm like, I'm putting it together in my head just going, yeah, I would totally believe that's not the same guy.
Yeah,
like,
I could see that. What about, is she familiar with Orson Welles' transformation?
I didn't hit her with that one at that point.
Okay, because that's a hard
one.
I
would think she is aware of it, like, now. But, I mean, you're talking about going from, like, Citizen Kane up to, like, selling peas
wine. Yeah. He was a great talk show host. Anyway, we're actually reviewing a film. None of the ones we've mentioned, except the one with Marky Mark.
Well, I mean, if he goes the way of these other gentlemen, like Marky Mark or Mark Wahlberg. I think he's earned it at this point.
Okay. Yeah.
I think we can call him his actual name.
I just love saying Marky Mark.
Planet of the Apes, Mark Wahlberg, that's Marky Mark.
Yeah.
At this point, I think he, like, I didn't like the Transformers movies, but you know what?
I liked him.
I guarantee you those paid well.
Oh, sure. I thought they were ponderous, but if it had been offered to me, it's like, okay.
Sure, I'll shoot a robot.
Again, we've made it clear.
I'll shoot a car that turns into a robot.
That, like, if Adam Sandler wants us in one of his lame Netflix movies, we're in.
Oh, yeah, I'll star in it. Like,
I'll bring his coffee.
You want to do Waterboy, too? I don't care. I am great with it.
Mm-hmm.
As one of his terrible films said, I'll just go with it.
Yeah.
It won't bother me a bit.
Not at all.
But Mark Wahlberg has not got into that bizarre transformative stage where he is unrecognizable from, say, his, was it Levi's he did? Or
No, it was Calvin Klein underwear.
That's right.
How can you even not have that image in your head whenever you see your spouse and you're deeply disappointed that, oh, sorry.
That they're...
That's out loud. Yeah, it was, if you don't know, Google Mark Wahlberg, or was he just called Marky Mark at the time? The Calvin Klein
it may have been
underwear
Mark.
Thing.
He may not have been known by a, I think he was just the Calvin Klein.
Yeah, I mean, he was incredibly ripped, and he is on this massive billboard in Manhattan, and I wish it had been here.
Which he parlayed into the Funky Bunch, which is, it's rap in the way that, like, Will Smith kind of raps, sort of rap.
You
like,
can
not,
get jiggy with it.
Kind of like that. not in the way that, like...
What if they did a song together? Okay.
I doubt it, but I'd listen to it. I'd listen. They should do it now.
Yeah.
That's what I'd listen to.
Yes, now. Okay.
And Mark Wahlberg, while not, like, quite as chiseled as he was there, like, the man is still physically fit. He is an imposing physical presence, which makes him perfect for action films.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I actually do think he has some dramatic chops, but he's really not flexing these in this movie.
I've got to say, I've gotten a kick out of Daddy's Home.
They
make me...
both of them are, I mean, honestly, they're funny. Him and Will Ferrell together have a great chemistry.
Jenna and I find them funny. Anna Grace and Jim do not. So...
I don't think they're the greatest. Like,
oh, they're not awesome.
It's not Blazing Saddles. Like, it's not... It's not any of that. Like, I'm not putting it in the top 10, but I will tell you, like, those two gentlemen have a distinct chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and they're amusing.
Yeah, it is amusing. So he is definitely the part of the action hero. So what's the story?
He has got to transport.
10 minutes in, we're talking to the story of the movie.
He has to transport.
His name I've forgotten.
Mile 22.
Mile 22, okay.
Basically, they've got to get 22 miles to an airfield. The gentleman that they're trying to transport has, like, the code they need to disarm this terrorist weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the only way that he'll do it is if they get him out of the country on this plane. When he gets on the plane, he will give the he'll give the go ahead.
Why?
I don't think that they spent too much about the why.
Okay.
But
I mean, I'm the bad guy, and I know this code. So once I give you the code, you throw me out of the plane.
He is supposedly like trying to defect from this group.
Oh, okay, all right.
So like that's why he is going to give them this code. But he wants to make sure that he is safe in order to do this.
Okay.
But like you've got like the Russians are involved. There's a lot of people that don't want him to make it these 22 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Mark Wahlberg and his team's mission.
Are they called the Funky Bunch?
No. Okay. I don't think there's any mention of a Funky Bunch or Funky Bunches, any of that. Or Bunches Funky, like none of that. No variation.
Somewhere on that set, you know, there was like a 40-year-old makeup artist just going...
I don't think he has a sense of humor about that kind of thing.
Oh.
And the man's bicep is probably around the size of my head. I am going to say they probably don't do that to him. He's not the one that you pour, like, you know, you'd pour the Gatorade, like, on top of your... That's the way Mark Wahlberg strikes me. Maybe he's not. Maybe he's this just wonderful, like, Santa Claus-esque, like, spirit. But I don't get that vibe from him.
I don't get that vibe from Donnie.
Any of the Wahlbergs. No.
So, 22 miles, bad guy wants to be a good guy, and action ensues.
Yes. And, I mean, a lot of action. A lot of gunfire. Like, John Malkovich shows up in what I can only assume was a two-day, like, filming schedule. He is the kind
of... head bad guy?
No.
Really?
No, you would think. That's generally when I see John Malkovich, I assume that's
he's
what you
would want
to do.
He's the weirdo bad guy or the weirdo bad guy.
He is like you've got the ops team, the one that's actually physically on the ground, and then you've got the other ones, like one of them's controlling like a drone, the other like is control of like the grid that they're sitting on can make lights like turn green, like can turn electricity off in a building. John Malkovich is the one that like he's the earpiece. He's the one they're talking to, and he's just like, "All right, I need this, and this to happen. You do not have clearance to do that. You need to get out now. That is a direct or like
okay. Now redo that scene as Jeff Goldblum.
Well, it's not as the movie loses a lot of intensity. Like,
you got to get out of there. You got to get out of there now.
I need you to.
No, you.
Let's see.
Is it in a hurry? You got to get there in a hurry.
What, boss? Did you?
I would love
is
that.
Boss? Did you say dinosaur?
You got to get out of there. You got to get out of there now.
I don't.
I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, that's. I think that's why Goldblum doesn't get a lot of those parts.
I would just love that.
I'm not telling you I wouldn't love it. I've told you before, recast Jeff Goldblum into every part ever. I'm in. I'll watch it. CGI his face in. I'm great. But for the intents and purposes of this movie,
he's a little more intense.
He's probably more appropriate for that.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, all he ever does, he's in a room with a lot of like computer screens in it. He's got like his finger on what I'm assuming is the earpiece in his ear, and he's saying things. They probably just had him, they're like, just say all of these lines and be intense. Like, I don't think I saw him out of that building but once in the movie. So... they probably got him on the cheap for what you could get Malkovich. They're just like, listen, we need you 3 days tops. 3 days tops.
I'm good with that.
Boom. Like, that's what I'm assuming with there. Wahlberg is in almost every shot of the movie. He did not have that abbreviated shooting schedule. But you've got, like, people coming up in, like, motorcycles and putting explosives, like, on their car. Ronda Rousey.
Okay. So you've got motorcycle chases. You've got the shootings of the shooters.
Yes.
Stuff blows up real good.
Yeah, there was
helicopter stuff.
Helicopters
stuff.
And like 747s and like military grade plane. Like
any
just
camels.
At one point, I did have to get up to go to the restroom.
Could have been.
It could have appeared then, but I cannot speak definitively.
Is there any drone on drone battling?
No drone on drone. But towards the end of the film, Wahlberg does call in a small strike with the drone. Like, it's kind of the equivalent back in the day of, like, what Demolition Man was for Stallone. Like, not a huge hit. like in his career. Like, it was enough that it turned a profit, but we don't talk about Demolition Man in the same way that we talk about Rambo or Rocky or I mean anything like that. It's a movie that if you were alive at the time, you probably saw, and occasionally it might turn up in a it turns 30 or 20 this year or whatever kind of article. But it's not this is also not a film I think that 20 years from now people are just going to be like, the definitive Mark Wahlberg collection coming out on 4K Blu-ray includes the following. Like, yeah. I don't think it's going to be – it's not going to be the – that's not going to be one of the movies that's included in that.
But for what it is, it delivers?
Yeah. Like, you don't need to go out into the theater, like, to see this. Like, it probably – I mean, it plays nicely in surround sound, and it looks good on the big screen. But, like, it's not an event. I would have been just fine if this was a movie. It's like, okay, if Striking Distance is on, Bruce Willis and, was it Sarah Jessica Parker? Like, if this is pre-Sex in the City, Sarah Jessica Parker. He's a Coast Guard in it. If it's on TNT and, like, I just can't fall asleep, I'll watch Striking Distance. Like, am I ever going to own Striking Distance on 4K?
No.
Is it on 4K? I don't know. I doubt it. Probably not, but it
irrelevant.
Yeah, this is a film. It's enjoyable. Like, you catch it on TNT, or if like you get a subscription to HBO Go or something like that, and it comes up, it is worth your time. Like, there's a little bit of setup for a follow up for the film, because there's no CGI monsters that are attacking a city.
Right.
You're not having to pay like a licensing right. Like,
I guess enough of the team survives where like two or three and him can go and.
Yeah.
Do other stuff.
Or, I mean, at the end of the day, it's kind of like the Mission Impossible franchise. Like, you've got those people that have turned up again and again and again in those movies, but the key ingredient, the essential ingredient to those Mission Impossible movies, and I'm not disrespecting Ving Rhames or Simon Pegg or any of those other people, Tom Cruise is the one that those films center around. He's the nucleus of that.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't get anybody else from Mile 22 to come back, except Mark Wahlberg, you can still do a, you know, Mile 23 or whatever whatever they decide, or if they decide to pursue a follow-up to this.
Maybe 22 Mile High?
Or we
eight?
U-turn?
Oh, maybe.
U-turn 21? I don't know. Like I said, but it was funny because the gentleman that I watched it with, I even commented, and I go, is it possible to come out of a movie these days that does not in some way set up like a spinoff or a sequel or a follow-up? Or can movies not just be over at the is like when the credits roll? Is that not a thing?
No,
it just
and
isn't.
You know, as you say it, I think I know why. Okay, first of all, they do it hashtag because money. But
I listen. I understand franchises, and
but that aside,
I watch every Marvel and DC film that comes out. So like, I'm part of the problem. I'm not turning my nose up at this. But just once in a while, is it possible to?
Well, I think if you look at it from the non-stars, if they're doing lights and sound, it's like, oh, we can do this again. I mean, I think it helps everybody in the industry to have a regular job, because even though actors that are successful make scads and scads o' dough,
the guy that's lighting like whatever,
yeah,
he may not. And I understand that you also want to have audience familiarity. Like,
yeah.
if I'm doing unnamed robot fight movie, there's going to be a lot less of a chance that you're going to open large than if it's got Optimus Prime and Bumblebee in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I understand why you want to sequelize things, because you don't have to teach the audience about it. There's no awareness to build. When I release an Iron Man movie with Robert Downey Jr., my job's done for me at that point. Like,
yes.
People recognize him. We're going to advertise it a little, but you don't have to educate the general public about who Iron Man is or who Robert Downey Jr. is as Iron Man. Like, none of that has to be done. You're going to have stories generated on that. You're not having to pay for all that advertising work.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, I understand it, but, like, I just – it's not based on, like, a comic book. It's not based on a book series. Like, Tom Clancy didn't write all of these Mile 22 – like, he didn't – it was just – it kind of amused me that I was like, we're sequelizing it all.
Yeah.
There is no way to get around it these days.
Case in point. Mamma Mia 2, which you have refused to see.
I mean, honestly, like, I haven't seen it yet, but probably at the end of Crazy Rich Asians, they allude to crazier, richer
Asians.
Crazier,
richer Asians.
That's Or that's what I assume they will call the sequel.
I can only imagine. Anyway, and that is on your list to see. It is, because it's very successful.
Yeah, and I mean, there's not a lot coming up in the next couple of weeks. Like, it is...
The Little Mermaid came out, and oh, wow, the reviews are horrible.
Wait, what?
I don't know if it's playing here, but I thought on Friday the live-action Little Mermaid came out, and Rotten Tomatoes has given it, like, I don't know, a one or something.
Like, Disney's the... They're doing a live...
Now I'm going to look it up. Because I thought it was going to be a big deal.
Disney is the juggernaut to stop all... That cannot be Disney's Little Mermaid.
I don't know who, but I'm about to find out. So that's what I am about to do. Find out whose Little Mermaid it is. Other than the fact that
I'm assuming Mark Wahlberg is not.
Huh.
He's not Prince Eric.
No, he is the mermaid.
That would... Oh, my goodness. Like, all right. I know.
Okay.
Maybe I'm in now.
The Little Mermaid is... It gets a 4.7 out of 10 on IMDb, 20% Rotten Tomatoes, and it did come out August 17th.
Is it like a recording of, like, the stage production of...
A reporter and his niece discover a beautiful creature they believe to be a real mermaid.
And they called it The Little Mermaid, and Disney did not sue them.
I'm trying to see who made it, but let's open IMDb. Yeah, the reviews were horrible, because I had made note of it, and why am I not seeing what I want to see? IMDb, why are you failing me?
That's...
Well, here, I'll just go to Variety. They're bound to tell me who made it. Because it's not being... It's an insipid family fantasy that barely serves as a mermaid placeholder.
Sure.
Okay, Shirley MacLaine's in it. She is not the mermaid. What? This is neither the Lin-Manuel Miranda-assisted Disney remake nor Universal's... Status Unknown project that has Chloe Grace Moretz attached, or the Hans Christian Andersen story, though this Little Mermaid is set in the 1930s. It makes Splash seem positively gritty by comparison. So you need to see that.
Ugh. I believe hashtag ponderous.
Well, there you go. So now none of us have to see that.
I think Variety was just doing a public service.
Yeah.
Like right there.
I do love a really well-written bad review. I feel bad for those connected, but there's a part of me, the writer part of me goes,
it's an art.
That's beautifully
it is
done.
An art. They are painting with words.
Yes, they are. So if you want just a fun action movie, worth a matinee.
It's adequate. It's not exceptional. You should not steer clear of it, but you don't necessarily need to do it immediately.
But if you really like action films and your choices are The Little Mermaid or Mamma Mia 2 or Crazy Rich Asians, perhaps this is the movie for you.
I don't think you really have a choice if you're looking for an action movie.
So there you have it. This could be it. Mile 22. And it just came out this weekend?
Yes, this past Friday.
Oh.
Yes.
And do you know how it's doing?
I don't think it won the weekend. I do think Crazy Rich Asians, is the
did.
One.
And Meg came in second.
Which is doing tremendously better than I thought.
Ever thought it
was
would.
Going to be.
Okay, I have to see how much it's making at this point. Because you totally listened to this as soon as we put it up. So it's really important.
We must be of the moment.
That I keep it relevant.
Of the to the minute.
Come on.
To the minute.
Whenever I'm using technology, I think of Homer Simpson because he's
they have internet on computers now?
No, he's at the microwave.
30 seconds? I can't
wait
30
seconds. Nobody's telling me anything. It's scrolling. I can't. I just can't. I'm not going to. We forgot to talk about this. Oh, Mile 22 opened to 13.6 million, just opening day.
Oh, that's not terrible for just for Friday.
We forgot to mention this, and we're going to do this quickly, but Billionaire Boys Club.
Made, what, 176?
Oh, it's 176 now. A few hours ago, again, keeping it real, it had sold just a handful of tickets is what it came
basically,
down to.
The way it broke down, they were saying, like, in the 10 cities that it opened, neither of which were New York or L.A., it was essentially making, like, there was about five people a theater.
Mm-hmm.
In 10 theaters, like, they were and if you're adjusting for the average ticket price or something like that, I mean, it just, they're saying it's not going to break $400. Not 400 million, not 400,000. $400 for the opening weekend.
That's like if you and I made a movie and asked
honestly,
people to pay for
it. I think we could probably open our movie to at least $400.
Okay, yeah, I think we could. Now, why is this happening, you may ask? Well, hashtag Kevin Spacey, hashtag me too.
I know that All the Money in the World was not a tremendous success, but it famously replaced Kevin Spacey with Christopher Plummer, not at the last minute, but pretty close to it.
So the timeline is important here. Now, first of all, I want to be very upfront about this, and Adam, I know, feels the same way. We do separate the artist's art from the artist, the person, unless it's Hitler. I know he painted, sorry.
That's, well, I think when the crime is heinous enough, I think at a certain point you just have to be like, you know what, I'll find another painting I like.
Yes, except for Hitler paintings. So I have always respected Kevin Spacey's acting work.
I thought he was an exceptional Lex Luthor. He was fantastic in Usual Suspects. I think the man was genuinely talented.
Yes.
The first, what was it, five seasons of House of Cards?
Ugh.
Like, he was incredible, like, in that series.
And I don't know how they will continue without him, because he was that incredible. However,
the fact that you have Robin Wright Penn, like, who is a very talented actress.
Oh, I know. She's not just Princess Buttercup.
If you are going to hang that on the shoulders of anybody else on that show, and like I said, I'm not, Kevin Spacey was, I mean, he could fill a room with his talent.
Mm-hmm.
He's also apparently predatorial.
There was a side to him we did not know.
Yeah.
So this movie was actually made in 2015.
I believe it like 2.5. It was completed like 2.5 years ago.
And so it was in 2017 when the accusations started to come out.
Yeah.
And he as well. And so there's that. And so they did decide to release it. But I think the studio is kind of, I mean, so many other names that you would recognize are involved, but for some reason I can only think of Judd Nelson at the moment. But there were others are in it, and it's based on a best-selling book. It's based on a true story. It is probably, even if it's not awesome.
Had this been released 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Probably would have been a, like, it's an independent film, probably would have been a modest success.
Yeah, easily, I think, because it, and should it be available for me to watch it for free in some fashion at some point in the future?
I think right now
I'd probably watch
it's video on demand.
Yeah.
I want to say it's available too.
They did do that, and I think they should have done that because of all the other people involved. But I also see how you want to distance yourself because you don't want to support Kevin Spacey's behavior or anyone else's predatory behavior. So it's like, what do you do?
I don't think they were in a position where they could just reshoot Spacey's part
right,
the way that they did with All the Money in the World.
And why did they sit on it for so long?
Some films, like especially independent films, like you don't necessarily have the back. Like, okay, when Avengers Infinity War Part 2 comes out, Disney has money set aside for the advertising of that for rolling out like the prints of it or the digitals or the poster. There is money in place because they know that this will generate X amount of dollars and go back into all of that is built into that. Billionaire's Boy Club, it's not a franchise. Like, it's not independent films. Sometimes you have to find your funding. Right. Or you have to, like, in order, like, some of them get into such dire straits, you have to find money to finish, like, the final sound mix mm-hmm. or something like that. And I think this is probably one of those movies that money had to be found to do these things.
Okay.
And they when, especially in 2017 when this happened, because it's not a movie that has to come out on May 22nd because there's a tie-in with McDonald's
right.
for it. You want to wait until these films are best positioned maybe for awards season or maybe until you found somebody that wants to back this movie. And they were probably close to something, I would say, in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever all that happened, any of the money that they did have that was going to catapult probably got pulled.
Yeah, and it would also put the actors who would have to go on the press junket to have to deal with questions about
Kevin Spacey. They
were
definitely going to be asked questions, which is the reason why I think it was a very limited 10-city run, because they knew whatever money that they put into this thing, they were probably not going to give it out. That's the reason why it's a video-on-demand release, gets released in 10 cities. I think they wanted to kind of ameliorate their loss. They're
right.
like, we can get something out of this. We're not going to make our money on it. We need to put this thing out, but we need to do it quietly, and there are no bells and whistles on this thing.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that's happened to so many other projects. I know because I have followed it closely, but the film version of Hamilton was on the line when all of the why is his name leaving me?
The main actor?
Producer guy, Weinstein.
Oh, Weinstein, yeah. Harvey.
Harvey. When all that broke, I mean, Lin-Manuel said, he's not going to profit by any of my stuff. And so then they had to go through a process of who's going to buy it, who's going to do this and that. And eventually that happened, and I'm sure that happened to many other projects. People say, this company, this person, I don't want to be associated with them because they do vile and disgusting things. And so the Me Too movement, which I totally support, it also does affect other people as it all shakes out.
Harvey Weinstein is not the only person that works at the Weinstein Company.
Yes.
And like even before I think the assets started getting divided up, he was removed from a company that bears his name.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, that's how heinous, like, what he was doing was viewed by his peers and the public. And I'm not defending him. I'm just saying,
right.
like, that it was to the point that a company that is named after him, that, like, I mean, he ran, he was pulled out of.
Right.
He was taken out of his own company. Like, if that kind of lets you wrap around how what he was doing and the things that he was doing were viewed in the industry in mm-hmm. general.
Huge repercussions. So we're probably going to find a few other films like this, maybe not a ton, that were maybe almost finished or whatnot, and they have to decide.
That are going to quietly,
yeah.
Do we bury this? Do we never release it? Or do we do it, and we do it at a loss, but at least this way
mm-hmm.
we're like at least $200,000 less of a loss than we would have been otherwise.
Right, because it's not just Harvey, it's not just Kevin, it's many, unfortunately, many, many people don't know how to behave like human beings. So, that being said, it's out.
And not to much acclaim.
Yes, but I'm wondering, is it going to go down in history as...
Right now, I believe, yes, it is
yeah.
one of the worst performing. I don't know about the definitive absolute worst, but I know that they were saying, like, for a Kevin Spacey film,
mm-hmm.
at the very least, it's the absolute worst opening he has ever had.
If you read a lot about film, you'll hear of titles like Heaven's Gate and Heaven's Gate.
Yeah.
And just what a nightmare that was. And
how it bankrupted a studio.
Dustin Hoffman and
Ishtar,
yeah. And Heaven's Gate and Ishtar.
And
so,
what they were calling that they thought Waterworld like was going.
Yes.
They were calling it Costner's Gate, mm-hmm. I believe.
So this is probably going to be one of those.
Like, it wasn't as. The thing about Ishtar and Heaven's Gate and Waterworld, those films were enormously expensive.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, this was an independent film, so I think you're dealing with several million dollars less on that end. Like, it's not bankrupting a studio.
Right.
But, like, when you look at the money that was put up for this versus what they probably thought that they were going to make from it, and if you look at, like, really any other film that Kevin Spacey has done, like, having on a average Friday, even for a small release, something like $4 or $5 million would not be out of the question.
Mm-hmm.
Having a film open on, like, I believe its Friday numbers were something like
$126 on a Friday.
Like, my electric bill this month will probably be more than it made on its opening day.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous for a film that had several million dollars. And Kevin Spacey has been in movies that cost $250 million.
Mm-hmm.
It boggles your mind to just see how much, like, money is going to be lost on that particular project.
Right. That is, sometimes, without continuing this much further, because we are actually reviewing Mile 22, which does not have Kevin Spacey.
No.
But it kind of makes you wonder, when you are someone who has that much at stake, do you behave that way because you are, it's a type of mental illness, or because you just think you'll never be caught? It's because you have so much power, you think that you'll get away with it, so it doesn't matter because it's you? I mean, is it all of that?
I think people like thrills. It's the reason why people like skydive. It's the reason why you want that adrenaline rush. And there is probably something, a negative aspect, the same reason like somebody would shoplift, not because they needed it, but because they wanted that thrill. Like, mm-hmm. I would say that's something of what Spacey was getting for that. Like, it wasn't that, or maybe he was like messed up in the head, but I think when you get to a certain point and you don't think there's anything people are going to tell you can't do.
Probably.
And you keep pushing those limits to the point that you're doing something like just deplorable and inhuman. I'm trying to wrap my head around a concept that I'll be honest, like I don't know how to get into that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
But I would think that would have to be you just keep pushing that envelope and going further and further to the point that like, You don't know where the line was, or
it has to be. And do we need to have different degrees of it? For instance, what Kevin Spacey did allegedly was horrible, but he didn't roofie a bunch of people either, Bill Cosby. So are there shades of it? Any of it's acceptable.
I think there are, but like, especially when you get to a certain level, I think it's definitively like a no tolerance. Like,
oh yeah.
Like Cosby and Spacey are effectively done mm-hmm. in the entertainment industry, probably professionally anywhere at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But I as much like as I enjoyed, say, the Cosby Show or The Usual Suspects, like you can't come back from that.
Right.
Like, there's not a situation, there's not an algorithm or an eventuality, I think, that the public accepts the two of them back into the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's just that's how much shade, like, is on that particular series of events.
And yet Polanski continued to make films.
I don't understand that. I genuinely don't. Like, when I've heard people pour like into the outcries and the support of him, like I've never heard a convincing argument for Polanski on why it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, I think he's a talented filmmaker, and I've heard other people that whose careers I respect and admire try to come to his defense, but I'm still just like, I can't get there mentally. I don't mm-hmm. understand
especially since I have a 13-year-old daughter.
I don't want to go into complete detail, especially on this podcast. If you don't know about what Roman Polanski did, Google it. It's awful.
Yeah. And he has continued to have a career.
Yeah, which I don't. Exactly. Again, I don't understand it.
I don't either. Anyway, just some deep thoughts here on Parental Guidance Suggested. And Mile 22, a shoot-'em-up fun movie.
Check it out. Nothing like the last, I don't know, 15 minutes that we just
that we're aware of.
No.
Anyway.
No.
Nothing is.
I don't think there's a deleted scene in that movie that let it go that dark.
At all. So, there you go. See it or not. It's going to.
Catch it eventually, but it's not a necessity.
Exactly. Save that necessity money for Crazy Rich Asians or Mamma Mia 2.
I don't know if I can support either of those statements.
Thank you so much for listening. I am Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Cravens.